Folks, we're currently $30,000 short of making budget this year, and we have 2 weeks left in 2012. Please support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with a year-end tax-deductible gift. You can make an online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make a tax-deductible contribution by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
The misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old. The pines were roaring on the height, the winds were moaning the fire was red, it flaming spread. The trees like torches blazed with light.
I cannot guarantee his safety.
Understood.
Nor will I be responsible for his fate.
A tale or two to tell when you come back.
Can you promise that I will come back?
No. And if you do, you will not be the same.
My name is Bilbo Baggins.
Bagginses. What is a Bagginses? Precious.
It's the trailer for the new movie, The Hobbit. I remember as a kid reading that book, and it introduced me to an entire world created of fantasy by J.R.R. Tolkien. I didn't know at the time that there were Christian themes running through that and the books that followed. Welcome back to Issues Etc. live on this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 18th of December. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us to review the movie The Hobbit. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting. Here in the first half hour of the program, and in the second half hour, we will be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker, the birth of Jesus in Luke chapter 2, the first 10 verses. And we'll spend that last half hour talking about that very familiar story from Luke's gospel of Jesus' birth. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is a regular guest. He's pastor for Witness at Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, good to be back.
I think you and I are separated by maybe half a generation, but I suspect we both grew up the same way. Our first exposure to J.R.R. Tolkien and his masterful works of fantasy came through this book, The Hobbit. And it was one of those things where I remember reading it as a kid and having pictures in my mind. The movie was running in my mind. That's just a tribute to how well he wrote the book. Does the movie, now that it's finally out, live up to your kind of Tolkien nerd expectations?
Oh, that is a deep and broad question, because you almost have to answer it on a sliding scale, right? I mean, what book or what movie made from a book ever lives up to the expectations of those who are the true fans of the book is very, very rare. But if I had to say, coming out of this movie, was I disappointed, I'd have to say no. I was really very pleasantly surprised. I had high hopes for the movie, but I was pleasantly surprised. I truly did enjoy it. And yet, if I go into it and I'm going to measure it on a scale of like, well, how narrowly did it follow the book? How perfectly does it follow the book, as it were? If you go in with that kind of assumption, you're going to be pretty frustrated by it. Jackson tries to do two things. He tries to please the fan, which is in him, and he's a fan, that's why he's made these movies. But then he also tries to open the book or the story to those who have no concept of, you know, what's a hobbit, right? Now, you and I, we know what a hobbit is, but there are people in the world, believe it or not, who don't. And so, well, how do you bring them into this movie as well? If I have disappointment, that's probably where it most was. I almost felt like early on in the movie he couldn't quite decide who he was catering to, the fan or the person who doesn't know what's going on, and that's where it's maybe at its weakest. when it's at its best is when Jackson kind of pulls the gloves off a little bit and says, you know, you fanboys, if you're going to complain about this, too bad, but I'm going to add this piece. I'm going to put this thing in that's taken out of other Lord of the Rings lore and or concepts. I mean, you can find this in whether video games or in some of the excerpts from older writings that Tolkien had that weren't ever published. You know, the spirit of these things are here, but it's not technically The Hobbit. It's not technically in the book. But those are some of the things that really make the movie work, in my mind. And I won't give those away too much, but certainly the whole building toward, I think, what's going to be the antagonist of the second movie is a trilogy, who is in Dol Guldur, which you don't even really hear about much in The Hobbit, the necromancer, is referenced briefly. He also brings in a lot of, like, Radagast the Brown, who's just a one-line kind of shot in the books. So there's that edge of it, and if you go in as a purist, you're really going to be frustrated by that. Also, if you go in as someone who's never seen these at all, you might feel like an outsider, and that probably will be the case early on. But at the same time, I think if you just kind of sit back and let the beauty of New Zealand and the storytelling take over, you're going to walk away saying, man, that was a good flick. That one's worth watching a second time, which I can't say. You know, all the movies I've seen this year, the ones I'd watch again, I can count on one hand, and this is in that list.
Okay. Explain, if you can, the story of The Hobbit, even though this movie is just the first third of the story, since he's maximizing, theater production here by turning this one book into three movies.
Well, I think he's smart to do that because this is one of the neat things. There's nothing he leaves out. The Hobbit, I mean, he's taken every single piece, every single scene. I mean, it's not quite that perfect, but he really does just cover the whole thing, and he can only do that because he's doing it in three movies. It made me wish that he'd taken nine movies to do the Lord of the Rings, which is the trilogy of books. Now, what is the story? I mean, this whole thing starts with Tolkien as a language professor in England writing a kid's book on accident. He had finished grading a paper, and he flipped over the paper and wrote, "In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit." He didn't even know what it was at that point. It is the story of a halfling, this kind of mythical creature that's not really a man, not really a dwarf, but kind of human-ish, kind of gnome-ish, but very English. This halfling person who gets swept up into an adventure with a band of dwarves who are going to reclaim their mountain home, which has been taken over and stolen by a dragon who lusted after their gold. And he's accompanied by a wizard named Gandalf the Grey. And initially, this book, I mean, it doesn't have all of the epicness that the later Lord of the Rings trilogy does. It's just kind of a kid's story about going to fight a dragon and coming back again. And yet it also then plants the seeds for this later series that he writes, the trilogy of Lord of the Rings, which is this easily the defining work of fantasy fiction in world history. I mean, outside of, like, Greek mythology itself, and still the standard by which everything is judged when you talk about fantasy fiction. What is the story? It is the story of a hero on travels to try to unseat the villain. He's weak. He's the one you wouldn't expect to be the key piece. All these dwarves are veterans of the world, and he's this guy who likes to cook fish. And by the end of it, he ends up being the master of the tale.
Okay, how far into the plot does this first movie actually take the moviegoer?
Now, without having read the book recently, I almost want to say it's halfway through the book by the end of this movie. They have gotten over the Misty Mountains, if I can give away that much of a hat tip. I think what's going to happen in the second movie then is, and this is a little speculation, is Jackson's going to diverge a little bit from the book to do more of this extra material from these other notes that Tolkien has. Some of it's from the Silmarillion. He's got another book I can't think of that was published posthumously by his son. He's going to dive into some of more of that to bring more of an antagonist feel to the second movie, and then in the third movie they're really going to hit the Misty Mountain and Smaug the dragon. But you are about halfway through the story at this point.
So let's talk about, and this kind of applies not only to The Hobbit, but to those previous trilogy of movies, the Ring series there. he's created a world, and it's decidedly a world of, from our perspective on this side of the book of the movie, a fantasy. He's got magic. He has, as you mentioned, mythical creatures. He has wizards and the whole interplay of good and evil there. What are your pastoral thoughts on the world of fantasy containing things that, well, first of all, don't exist? Some people, I might say, that's a total waste of your time. And then things that some people, Christians especially, might have questions about, and namely the magic or the wizardry.
Sure. Well, pastorally, that just comes down to, are you capable of discerning reality from fantasy? You know, when you're sitting after dinner at night thinking, man, I would just love to live in a beach home in the Caribbean and drink martinis the rest of my life. Are you able to stand up and say, you know, that's a silly dream, that's not real, never going to happen, I'm not even going to try to make it happen, but it was nice to think about for a moment. Or are you going to, like, let that become your idol where you, leave your family and go try to, you know, find a way to make that happen for the sake of the idolatry that you want this thing to be? If you can't make those kind of distinctions between your dreams and reality, or even the dreams you have, you know, in your bed at night and reality, well, then certainly fantasy fiction is probably dangerous to you. However, if you're like most people and you kind of can tell real from not real, then it's not going to be a danger spiritually to you. Yes, Tolkien plays with the world that can't possibly exist. And if it did exist and Christians somehow fell into it with the scriptures we have today, we would have to call Gandalf the Grey, we would have to call him evil. Because he is messing with powers which God has not given to men to use. However, we don't live in that world. The scriptures don't exist in that world. It is entirely made up. And if you can step back and look at it, Gandalf the Grey ceases to be evil and, in fact, becomes something of a Christological figure, especially later in the series, where through things like death and resurrection, he helps all of mankind as they exist overcome evil and bring about an age of peace. And so the story itself becomes something of a hat tip to what Christians really do believe, even while playing with a world that can't possibly exist. Now, this is, if you were to compare actual false religion with the kind of playfulness with which this stuff is approached in Tolkien and in much fantasy, you can see just on the page the difference between reality and make-believe. It's kind of like the Harry Potter stuff. Harry Potter, I mean, the danger in the Harry Potter books has never been the playful magic where you put a spin on the word abracadabra and suddenly it's a curse that kills people. The danger has been the moral relativism of the main character, who has no problem breaking rules when it suits his own ends. And I say that as someone who loves the books and reads them to my kids, and you know, we talk about, oh, was that a good decision Harry made? But we laugh about the magic. You go see what the Wiccans are doing with their magic, where they're drawing circles and sacrificing fruits and vegetables and stuff. And I honestly don't know that much about Wicca, but it's a world away. Real-life humans attempting to manipulate the universe by supernatural means is a world away from a guy using a wand to make his book levitate while he's in class in, you know, the middle of the mountains in England.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the movie The Hobbit. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest reviewing that movie on this Tuesday afternoon, December the 18th. When we come back, there's no doubt about it. You read The Hobbit, or you read the subsequent novels from J.R.R. Tolkien, and you were pretty much forced to conclude that the author, while not injecting that worldview overtly into his book, he is operating and writing from a full-blown Christian worldview. And we'll find out where we do see that in The Hobbit, the movie, right after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Grace Lutheran, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Heritage Lutheran, Valparaiso, Indiana. Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota. Our Savior's Lutheran, Windham, Minnesota. St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. St. John Lutheran, Yuma, Colorado. Christ Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri, and Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muscoota, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.
The Advent hymn, Watchmen of Zion, sung by the Boston Camerata, playing right now at Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world. And here's what Rebecca in Unionville, Michigan, very recently posted at our Facebook fan page. She says, it's very hard for me to get into the Christmas spirit after all the Christmas shopping, Christmas school parties, and the like. I'm listening right now, and I am so thankful for this rich heritage that we have been given in God's Word and the gift of sacred music. This definitely prepares me for Christmas. Thank you, says Rebecca in Unionville, Michigan. That's pretty common for the kind of comments we're hearing at LutheranPublicRadio.org. People appreciate the fact that the preparation for Christmas comes with the church's season of Advent, and we are in that season right now. We can wait. That's what Advent is all about. We can be patient. That's what Advent is all about, and that's what we're doing at Lutheran Public Radio. We are waiting, and we are celebrating Advent through the music there, the sacred music that you can find 24/7 at LutheranPublicRadio.org, sacred music for the world. We're talking about the movie The Hobbit. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. Jonathan, you can't read these books without coming to the conclusion that the author, J.R. Tolkien, is writing from a full-blown Christian worldview. These aren't books that could have been written by an atheist. Where do we see the Christian worldview in The Hobbit?
In The Hobbit, it's less there, honestly. A lot of it comes out more in The Lord of the Rings. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because the Hobbit is more intentionally playful. It's more of a children's book, and the later books get pretty intense. They're epic again. But there is, I guess, if you were going to have it come out, there is a very clear distinction between right and wrong, embodied by light and darkness, or good and evil, even as it were. There is a heightening of the pursuit of virtue and honor, even integrity. There is a belief in the fact that for good to win, it must actually fight. It must do something about the evil. All of those things are part of a Christian worldview. I would say that I think God does come into play, mystically almost, in The Lord of the Rings. There's a lot of talk about the country across the sea, which is very reminiscent of something that C.S. Lewis, Tolkien's good friend, would play with as well, with Aslan, and coming from the kingdom across the sea. And then there's a strange character named Tom Bombadil, who he's not in The Hobbit, he's in the later books, and he didn't make it into the movies that Jackson did, but people have wondered about him a lot. He's almost all-powerful. Who is this guy who seems content to be perfect and watch the world pass with total trust that all things were going to work out because there's some sort of plan. Unique thing. Now, is that God? No, but there's like this trust in a greater power going on thing, which is there in the books. But again, back to The Hobbit, virtue, pursuit of good over evil, and sort of a belief in the goodness of creation, too. One of the things that's real neat about the hobbits as a people is they love life. They love to eat. They love to have drinks together. They love to party. They love their mornings. They just kind of enjoy what you would call the vocation of homesteading, something that is really lost on Americans. And some of that may be our heavy materialism, and we're always trying to get so much in the present that we can't enjoy what we have. So there's that too. But Christocentric themes, salvific themes, less of those in The Hobbit than in the later books where they become really, really prevalent.
Talk about two characters that are in The Hobbit, and one of them actually survives into and becomes central in the rest of the books in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And both of them have one thing in common, that is they're both kind of consumed by their own sin. One of them is Gollum. And he's probably the one that bears the most scrutiny. But the other one is the dragon, who is actually a character.
Yeah.
And he's consumed by, like all dragons are, I guess, according to lore, by his intense greed. He just sits on top of the dwarves' gold, and he can't spend it. He can't do anything with it. He just guards it viciously.
Yeah. Now, and the dragon, again, doesn't come in too much into this. There's these foreshadows of it at the very beginning of the movie, but otherwise, in this particular movie, he's not there yet. He's kind of left for the last movie. But to be sure, I mean, his entire existence is to sit on this pile of gold and protect it with a sort of an avarice. And something of an image of mankind's ability to make an idol out of something that is then useless, to become stuck in his sin, so to speak. Gollum, on the other hand, is just this fascinating character of this creature who probably was good, at least civilly, as we would call it, but is corrupted by this ring of power, which is in itself an evil thing, and I think maybe does represent sin in itself. And he wants this thing, this self, he even calls it himself, my precious, he says to it, and he speaks to himself and the ring at once, calls this thing, or covets this thing so much that he will live alone in the dankest depths of mountains rather than be near anything that might threaten it. And when he does lose it, as happens in this first movie, in fact, Bilbo finds it, ends up going on a quest to get it back, which ends with nothing less than his own death. In victory, he finally gets the ring back, and he dies at the same moment, and that's the big end of the trilogy. Profound character studies, and Jackson really pulls this out well. He did it really well in the other three movies with Gollum, and he you can see him kind of leading the prelude with this movie as well. Gollum's got this dual personality going on, where he's both his old self and his new self, but the old self's the good one, and the new self's the bad one, the covetous one. And he uses it for comic relief a little bit too, really well, in fact. If you're looking though for as much of what he did with that in the later movies, it's not there in The Hobbit. It is more introducing this character. And I think part of that is just the nature of the book, The Hobbit, doesn't play on these deep themes as much as the latter trilogy does.
The character of the ring, which is definitely introduced here in the broader story of The Hobbit, if not in this first of the movies, it's not, if I remember correctly, in the story, the ring isn't perceived to be evil. You only have that by virtue of what it's done to Gollum, but that's not explained. None of that is really explained very much. The ring seems to be a good thing for Bilbo when he finds it. It saves him out of a lot of problems.
Yes. In fact, and this was just came across my desk last week, someone sent me, a member of the church sent me a link. The original writing of The Hobbit, the ring was not evil at all, and Gollum doesn't even lust after it. In fact, in the riddle game, he bets the ring against eating Frodo rather than Bilbo, rather than betting showing Bilbo the way out of the mountains. And he would never have done that. And that's in the original edition. And then after Tolkien began writing The Lord of the Rings, he went back and revised it and took a couple pieces out. And I was at the website where you could see the places where he's changed just a few sentences here and there, but not a lot. And so you're right. It does still kind of just seem like this petty thing early on, and you're not sure, is this just a ring of power or the ring, right? So it is it shows, I think, what you see there is just the history of story writing. Tolkien writes one book that is complete in itself, but has the shadows of other books in it, and yet as he begins to write those other books, he finds that he wants to do more with the story, and to be consistent, the old book has to change a little bit. Anyone who's tried to write anything ever knows that the moment you go back and read through it again, you start making changes. And when you try to make a story that is 300 to 400 pages long, the number of mistakes you can build into that book are phenomenal. What's amazing about Tolkien's work is that in spite of how long it is, how consistent it was, and this is all before modern editing equipment. I mean, he's doing a lot of this work by hand or by typewriter. It's a tremendously consistent story. But to be sure, the ring is not this great evil in The Hobbit. You have to read that back into it. Now, Jackson pulls it out a little bit more, but not a lot. He's not really focused on that.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor for Witness and Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Now, this is a book, speaking of Jonathan's book Broken, that I highly recommend. It's one of those things that is thoroughly Lutheran, but you're not going to find Luther's seal on every page. And that is to say, it is thoroughly Lutheran, but is written for people who have never heard the word Lutheran, or perhaps have a negative connotation with the word Lutheran, but it is still thoroughly Lutheran and scriptural. The book is called Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, or you can call Concordia Publishing House, and I think they're probably getting ready to go into their second printing of Broken, and ask them for it, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Jonathan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back on this Tuesday afternoon, December the 18th, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker teaching a Sunday school lesson. Now, these are some of the hardest ones to teach, the ones that everybody knows. You know, we have things like David and Goliath. Well, we found a new angle on that. Not a new angle, really, the old Testament angle with Christ at the center. What about the Christmas story? What about Luke chapter 2, the first 20 verses that tell the story of Jesus' birth? How do we tell this story in such a way as to remain faithful to the text to people who have heard it 1,000 times? We'll be right back. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Rocking around Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.